Thanks
everyone for coming on. You ready, Lynn, or? We're rolling? Okay, we're rolling. So we're going to talk about something called the monomyth. Mono, of course, means one. Myth means mythology, means like a story. A myth may be true or false, but it's usually coming from an ancient culture. So in the monomyth, which has been described by Joseph Campbell did a lot of research on these different things like the Iliad and the Odyssey and all the heroic journeys since the beginning of time, and especially from the Vedic literatures, he came up with certain, let's say, stereotypical or archetypical characters that were in each and every one of these myths. And what he found was that there is usually a hero who's just living a very ordinary life. And then he has a call to adventure or to challenge, and he meets a mentor. A mentor means like a spiritual master. Like you see in Star Wars, there's definitely mentor personalities. And he gets this power, and then he comes back, saves the world, and becomes a great personality. He may pass away or die later on. So this Joseph Campbell was one of the mentors of Lucas. Everybody's heard of Lucas, George Lucas? He's the filmmaker who came up with the whole idea and the scripts and everything like that of the Star Wars series. And so he spent a lot of time, actually he lived with him for a long period of time, to tell him about these different myths. Because when people would see a story using these different archetypical characters, they could easily enter into the story. That story would become attractive and in fact would make him money, which is one of his objectives, I'm sure. So there's a general hero's journey, which you can see there. It's like in a circle, is a call to adventure. He meets a mentor, and there's a threshold, which is the beginning of his transformation. And then he comes to a point of no return. He just embarks on this. Like you see, Lord of the Rings is another example of this. And then he gets his power and returns home after saving the world. Very simple thing. And of course, this is defined in greater depth, and we're not going to go into all these different details on this particular chart. But here's the basic steps. There's the ordinary world the person is part of. He meets the mentor who gives him the adventure, gives him the goal. But he has to go through a lot of trials and tribulations, risks his life in many different ways, and steps over this threshold, that's the point of no return, goes through a tremendous ordeal, and gets power. You see, in Star Wars, this occurs. And then he goes back to the ordinary world, and he applies this boon and saves everything. So here's some of the stories that fit into this particular genre. Have any of you seen any of these movies? I mean, I just saw Bring Him Home, The Martian, on a plane. I don't waste time usually watching too many movies. But it's about it's a guy who's stranded in Mars. You know, they leave him behind, thinking he's dead. And then he has to learn how to grow things by himself. You seen the movie? Nobody's seen the movie. Okay. I guess I've seen more movies than anyone else here. So this is a new movie, actually. And Avatar, I'm sure everyone's seen Avatar, right? The other ones I've seen Matrix also. I haven't seen Mad Max, thank God, whatever that is. And then, of course, you have the biblical stories, like Lord Jesus, who meets his mentor, John the Baptist, and he gets empowered and carries out his mission and transforms the whole world. So this is, I mean, many of these stories actually occurred. It's not that they're all myths in the sense of being fictional. So here's more. Lord of the Rings, Jason and the Argonauts. Does everybody recognize what's going on to the lower left or the middle left here? What is that? That's Moby Dick. Anyone's read that book? It used to be required reading when we were young. but anyway, whatever. And who is this? Joan of Arc. And she actually saved France. And she was killed, burned at the stake when she was 18 years of age. And she led the battle against England and enabled France to be independent. She's considered one of the greatest heroes or heroines of all time, Joan of Arc. So the idea of a hero is not just a male figure, but can be a female figure too. So it transcends the boundaries of the sex that a person is. And of course, other great heroes like, who's this? Dr. Martin Luther King. And what did he say? I have a dream. And he fulfilled that dream. And here's Obi-Wan Obama. Establishing health care, trying to establish universal health care for everybody. You've never seen him like this? But it's interesting, Obama has a lot of Indian relics. He actually has a little Hanuman statue that he keeps in his pocket. And so there's stories from the Vedic literatures too. I mean, there's this one story of, to the left, that's Pollad Maharaj, who was basically tortured by his father because his father didn't want him to take up Krishna consciousness. In those days, they didn't have psychiatrists, you know, that the parents would call for psychiatrists. So the father thought, you know, let's just do away with him. But he was saved. And there's another little boy, his name is Dhruva over there, who was rejected by his father because his father was favoring not his mother, but another lady. And he was able to achieve great success and power because of that, because he underwent austerities. Different stories. This is a story of Bhart Maharaj from the Vedic literatures. Bhart Maharaj was a person who became too attached to a deer, and the Bhagavad Gita states that whatever you're thinking at the time of death, that's the type of birth or appearance you take in the next life. So he became a deer. And that's a pretty difficult life to be in, you know, from a human being. And then he was able to rectify that and become a great saint in his next life. And similarly, there's a story of Narada Muni, who was born into a very poor family, didn't know who his father was. His mother died when he was 5 years old, and he had to wander in the woods. And eventually, he became a great spiritualist with mystic power, able to travel from different planets without a spaceship. So this is the story of the Ramayana, which is an ancient Vedic text. Anyone here heard of the Ramayana? Akshay has. So in the Ramayana, we're going to talk more about it, but the Star Wars series was actually based on the Ramayana and has parallel characters to the characters in the Ramayana. And there's modern Indian heroes too. We're not going to get into detail who these personalities are. That's my spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, who I took initiation from my mentor, or got empowered by, in 1972. So the Gita tells us about this path of heroism. In order to be a hero, and I remember in the 1960s, which I come from obviously, that everyone wanted to save the world. I don't know if too many people want to save the world now, do they? Probably not. You do? Okay, that's good. We got one person who wants to save the world. Everyone else, let the world go to hell. So she's a hero. So, you know, when I was young, there was this whole idea, it was the Vietnam War years, that let's transform the world, save the world. And a lot of the music was based upon that particular theme. I mean, like you have Peter, Paul, and Mary, John Dylan, you know, so Bob Dylan, sorry, not John Dylan. Yeah, Bob Dylan. You have so many personalities who are pushing for that. In fact, practically my whole generation was like that. So the Gita talks about this, that in order to save the world, one has to sacrifice something. And there's an interesting quote from Campbell here. And I'd like to read that. Let me just find that quote. Yeah, Campbell said, in order to have a hero's journey, we have to let go of the life we have planned so as to accept the one that is waiting for us. In other words, you know, we may be planning a very comfortable life, but there may be an alternative, a fork in the road. You may want to take the road less traveled, as the poets say, and do something for humanity. So this means giving up some things that we may like to do for a higher pleasure, a higher ecstasy, which is in serving humanity. And there's success for someone who is a very rigid practitioner. These are all quotations or summaries from different verses in the Gita. And Krishna in the Gita says, my devotee will never perish or put into situations where there is risk of perishing. In other words, one will always be protected. So ultimately in the Gita you have the injunction, stand up and fight. And fight doesn't mean, you know, you put your fists up or you take a gun and start shooting people, but you actually fight for the right thing, whether that means speaking or helping people. And you see so many heroes like Mother Teresa. I mean, she was a fighter. And so, all right, here's the Ramayana. And in the Ramayana, we have many, many different characters. There's Ram, who is the great hero, Lakshman, his brother, and you see a monkey over there, his name is Hanuman. And we're going to show you how this Ramayana was based, Star Wars is based on the Ramayana. And here you have the different personalities in Star Wars. I think you may recognize most of these people. That's your favorite person. So in Star Wars, you have someone called the Dark Lord, who's known as Darth Vader. And in the Ramayana, you have someone called Ravana, who's the Dark Lord. Akshay, you're familiar with this?
Yeah.
Good. And so very, 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 very similar. One interesting thing about it has nothing to do with the presentation tonight, is that children are very attracted to dressing up as Darth Vader. Can anyone guess why? No, not just a cool mask, but I've been at people's homes where their little kid, 5, 6 years old, puts on the mask and acts like Darth Vader. Not exactly. It's been analyzed by the psychologists.
Disguise becoming someone else so you cannot be...
You're on the right track. You got power. Because children feel disempowered because they're controlled by their parents. So here's Darth Vader, no one can touch him. And Ravana was very similar, very, very similar personality. And he did things the same as Darth Vader did. Here's Darth Vader with who? What was that? Princess
Leia.
And he tried to kidnap her, isn't it? And here we have the Dark Lord Ravana from the Ramayana. Kidnapping, does anyone know who? Sita Devi. And he kept her captive. Here you see Leia kept captive and Sita Devi kept captive. Same story, just changing the names and changing the situations. And then you have a young man who becomes empowered with different celestial or mystic weapons. Of course, in Star Wars, the weapon was more technological, but it's like a mystic weapon. And that's Ram, of course, with his bow, and he had many mystic arrows, not just regular bow and arrows. And in order to get that power, they had to get instruction from a guru. So there's Ram as a little kid getting instruction from his guru in a traditional Vedic setting. And who's that? Luke and Obi-Wan. Not Obi-Wan Obama, but Obi-Wan Kenobi. So he's getting instruction. Remember, he was fighting this little thing that was flying through the air. Has anyone seen that? Really, nobody's seen Star Wars here.
The
Luke Skywalker. Right?
That's how he was getting trained with his lightsaber. Okay, and also, you have a monkey-like character. And that's who? Hanuman and... Definitely similar, completely similar. Of course, Hanuman could talk, whereas Chewbacca can talk, but only he could not be understood by anyone. Not by Obi-Wan. And here you have like a brother character who helps the main hero. And the Ramayana, you have a brother character who helps the main hero. So similar. And you have big monsters and machines that the armies are fighting against. And then you have monkeys and bears. Remember that from the Star Wars? Monkeys and bears that are helping the heroes. Amazing. And finally, there's a coronation. Whoops. Exactly. You see, it's exactly the same. Exactly, practically speaking, exactly the same. Of course, Chewbacca's not there on the picture on the right.
Wait,
that's
him
on the far right.
You can see the hair.
Is he there? On the
far right.
Yeah.
Oh, he is there. Sorry, I didn't even notice that. So it's the same thing. They're standing up there being coronated. Amazing. And that's Lucas. And Campbell, Joseph Campbell there. His spiritual master. And so now I want to talk about a modern day hero's journey. This is, of course, my spiritual mentor, spiritual master Srila Prabhupada. And his journey parallels all these different journeys too. So he was born, this is not a picture of his birth, of course, but he was born into India that was captive by the British. And the British considered the people in India to be no better than, let's say, Aborigines, and the only way they could be utilized would be as slaves or as servants. And this is quite a racist understanding. In fact, it was the British and the Germans who came up with this whole idea of the what we call the Aryan invasion. Anyone's heard about that before? Where there's no archaeological, anthropological evidence of any Aryan invasion. But the only way they could explain that the Vedas were so advanced linguistically, technologically, and so forth, because there was information about the atom in the Vedas, the only way they could explain that was that somewhere in the past, we, you know, the great Europeans came to India and mixed with some of the people in India, and we gave them our civilization. So this is definitely like a racial, racist type of understanding. And here you see the typical picture from the 1800s. Some very proud Englishman. Anyone here from England? No, thank God. So, but India had a far more advanced culture. And it, particularly, they did not like the stories or the depiction of Radha and Krishna. This really irked them more than anything else. Anyone here ever seen Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom? No, I haven't seen these movies. So that, you know, they had this concept about the temples in India that, you know, they were basically people were being offered alive on the altar or something like that. You know, just like really crazy concept to denigrate Indian culture, because the British mainly were interested in exploiting for economic purposes. Britain was a country of like shopkeepers, basically. And that's what they did in America, too. I mean, that's why we rebelled. We had our Boston Tea Party and so many other, and the Revolutionary War, ultimately. So they didn't like Krishna that much. In fact, they criticized very harshly Hinduism or Krishna consciousness, like this Reverend Alexander Duff said, of all the systems of false religion ever fabricated by the perverse ingenuity of fallen man, Hinduism is surely the most stupendous. And then even their own people started to give in just to make peace with the British and win followers. This is a famous person named Swami Vivekananda. Anyone familiar with him? No. Everybody in India knows about him. Images, crosses, and crescents are simply so many symbols to hang spiritual ideas on. Idolatry in India does not mean anything horrible. It is an attempt of undeveloped minds to grasp spiritual truths. And even the president of India, one of the past presidents of India, Dr. Radhakrishna, commenting on a verse in the Gita where Krishna is very specific about his personhood, where Krishna says, be mindful of me, always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, offer everything to me, surely you'll come to me. He comments on that verse. It is not to the personal Krishna to whom we have to give ourselves up utterly, but the unborn, beginningless, eternal who speaks through Krishna. And that's not really an understanding of the Sanskrit, because in the Sanskrit, the word mom or me is used many, many times. And then, of course, you had the Muslim invasions previously, and there were 80 million people who were followers of the Vedic tradition killed within the space of about 150 years. This is actually the worst Holocaust that's occurred in the history of mankind. But you don't read about that. 80 million. And so into this is Gandhi's movement. I think most of you are familiar with Gandhi, Mahatma Gandhi, who wanted to liberate India from the British. And at the same time, Abhay Charan, who later became A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, appeared in 1896. And he led a very ordinary life. He was engaged in the pharmaceutical industry. I wasn't supposed to say drugs. And at that time, pharmaceuticals meant something very, very simple, like liniments and distilled water and stuff like that. It wasn't like nowadays where you take one pill and it costs like $10,000 a pill. There's actually some pharmaceuticals that are like that. Like if someone gets cancer or something and you take these pills. And so he meets his mentor in 1922 when he was 26 years old. And his mentor gives him a mission immediately, go to the West. And he's just a young man, just actually follower of Gandhi at that particular point. And he thinks, how is this possible? Go to the West and spread this spiritual movement. And his spiritual master even previously tried to send people to the West, and he paid for it with his own money. And they were rather unsuccessful. Then, let's call him Prabhupada from now on. That's an easy way to describe him. Prabhupada means a spiritual master, basically. And so at that time, when his spiritual master passed away, his life began to fall apart from a material perspective. For example, his wife turned against him whenever he wanted to teach about spirituality. His wife would actually do things like blow dust in the person's face that he was actually preaching or speaking to. She would use a feather duster. In those days, they didn't have vacuum cleaners. And he was basically penniless. He started a league of devotees, and he lost that after some time. And he took the step, the point of no return, of renouncing the world, giving everything up. And that's what you see, that's with a dunda. That's a tradition in India, of giving everything up. Lived very austerely in a place in Vrindavan, in a center, the Radha Damodara Temple, just planning out how he would carry his mission out and come to America. Finally, he gets free passage on a steamship. It's called the Jaladuta, from the owner of the steamship company, whose name is Sumati Morji. Comes to America with basically nothing, maybe $10 worth of Indian currency, which is called rupees, and just sits down and chants. And from sitting down and chanting and doing this austerity and going through the point of no return, he begins to attract many, many young people in New York. This is a picture of his first center at 26 Second Avenue in New York City. And he starts to write more books and publish books. And eventually, everything picks up steam. And from the beginning, the first year, of course, he has maybe 1,000 books that are distributed or printed. It's Vedic literatures. And by the time he leaves this world, there's 13 million. And that's in the space from 1966 to 1977, 11 years. And he's opened up 108 temples around the world, 108 spiritual centers around the world. And there's people all over the world chanting everywhere from, of course, that's from India over there. And even there was a court case that accused Krishna consciousness of being brainwashing. Because many times, many of us experience that when we first took up this spiritual path, our families got rather upset. What do you think of, Shai? I mean, that it's not that everybody has to dress like this either. I mean, most people practice Krishna consciousness, they just dress normally in society. I dress like this because I'm a sannyasi, and I feel comfortable, and because, you know, maybe you'll respect me more. So I explained that the other day. So, we were accused of brainwashing, and many times individuals had to meet with psychologists and psychiatrists because our parents were worried. What happened with me, for example, one time I went home to visit my father, and my father said, "I'd like you to meet my friend, Dr. Freud." So, you know, he wasn't Dr. Freud, obviously. And I shook hands with him, and my father said, "Oh, I got to go somewhere." So if my father goes away for like 3 hours and I'm stuck with Dr. Freud there for 3 hours, and he's saying, "How do you feel?" "Fine." And then I ask him, "How do you feel?" He says, "Fine." And he says, "Aren't I supposed to be interviewing you?" I said, "No. I'm interviewing you." Yeah, anyway, so we go through this whole thing with Dr. Freud, and then at the end, my father comes back and says, "What do you think, Dr. Freud?" And I don't remember his name, obviously. And he says, "Too bad, he's normal." So I think many of us have experienced that. Because sometimes when we actually first engage in spiritual life, we just become so, like, happy, because that's one of the things that the byproducts of spiritual life is you become happy, you have a goal. Life isn't just meant for just living for the sake of living. That's what I would tell my parents. You know, life shouldn't be just like, I asked my mother, "Why should I become a doctor?" And she said, "To please me." And I said, "Why?" And she said, "That's your duty." And I said, "Why?" She said, "Because you got to make a living." "Why?" "Because you got to support your family." "Why?" And after that, she got frustrated. So many of us want to live a life that has some meaning rather than just living for the sake of living, you know, just getting a big house and everything like that. So, you know, many of us chose that. So there was a court case that accused many of us of being brainwashed or brainwashing others. And this court case was held in New York. And the judge said, "This is crazy, you know, this brainwashing case, and this is a bona fide spiritual path." So when Prabhupada heard this or saw the newspaper report, he said, "Now my mission is accomplished." And so we got, here's someone that Akshay may recognize. Who's that, Akshay?
He already left. I can't remember his name.
Amitabh Bachchan. Yeah. Amitabh Bachchan is the most famous movie actor, all sorts of actors in India. And he is helping us commemorate the opening of a center for Vaishnava, that's Hare Krishna studies, in Oxford University. Oxford is one of the most prominent universities in the world. is a, you know, on the same level or even maybe even higher than Harvard and Yale. It's considered very, very high. You know, Oxford, Cambridge in the UK. So we have this whole department of Krishna studies, which is called Vaishnava studies there. And the person who spearheaded that, his name is Shanaka Rishi, he's on the left and his wife is on the right. So this is a very prominent person. And here's one of our great heroes, a great friend of mine who passed away a number of years ago. His name is Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. And he basically spearheaded the development of Krishna consciousness in Africa. He also had a center in Washington, D.C. He and I spent a lot of time traveling with each other. And, you know, he was basically my closest friend. And then he passed away due to cancer a number of years ago. So he's a great hero who basically followed the same steps. He was also the student body president in the Princeton University before he took up the process of Krishna consciousness. And, of course, this is another great hero. Another great Krishna hero. Does anyone recognize who that is?
Tulsi Gabbard.
She's a congressperson in the United States. And she took her oath on the Bhagavad Gita. She's the congressperson in Hawaii, from Hawaii. And she's the sister of Tulsi here, that's why. Same name. Not really, that's a joke. That's Tulsi Gabbard. And then in India, now, continuing like Prabhupada's journey, we distribute over 1 million plates of food to poor people every day. I think Mara is going to be going there and helping with this, right?
I hope so.
Hopefully soon. And one of the places we distribute is in a place called Vrindavan. We have a school for poor kids. And so this is a very important part of our philosophy. And this, we also have a scientific branch in which we're showing that life actually comes not from matter as an epiphenomenon of matter, but life comes from the soul, which is different than matter. In other words, consciousness comes from the soul, not from a combination of matter. And the person you see on the right, his name is Sataputta. He's a great mathematician who used the science of probability, not science, but the mathematical theories of probability and information theory to show that evolution could not have occurred just mathematically. And he has a whole book on that called Mechanistic and Non-Mechanistic Science. Do you have a copy of that, Tulsi? No. So if anyone's interested in mathematics or the science of probability or information theory, it gets quite complex. I mean, I can understand it because it was my background. Many years ago, I was a scientist working with nuclear energy. Years ago. And so then we have people in Russia. You see people chanting in Russia, Paris. And a lot of the famous players in the Kirtan movement actually came about because of Prabhupada's, or became empowered, because of Prabhupada's coming to America. Of course, the picture on the top is not in America, obviously. That's from India. That's two personalities, Chaitanya and Nityananda, Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, who started the Kirtan movement 500 years ago. And in America, you find many famous persons like Jayutal or Krishna Das. I'm sure some of you have heard of these people. And they're following in Prabhupada's footsteps. And of course, the yoga movements, too. They became famous. Well, prominent now. There's many different types of yoga. There's Bikram yoga. I mean, there's probably thousands of different types of yoga. And then there's a major meditational center we're setting up in India right now. And these are the Dalai Lama honoring Prabhupada, the mayor of Paris. That's a statue of Prabhupada, but he's putting a garland on it. The mayor of Paris greeting Prabhupada. And who's that on the bottom? And that was Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, my friend who opened up Africa. And he was honored by Nelson Mandela like that. And so now we have about 500 million books that have been distributed since Prabhupada started in 1966. Actually came to America in 65, but things really got rolling in 1966. This is like the 50th anniversary of that.
And it looks like
And here's our Krishna West Center in New York. Pretty good, isn't it? This is at the same place that Prabhupada started in 1966. It's called Matchless Gifts. And whoops, sorry about that. Go back. Krishna West is the best. Anyway, so and this is the last slide. And so then we all have this hero's journey, and for each of us it's different. I'm not suggesting you have to follow the path that you should follow the path that I follow or Prabhupada follow or anything like that, but we each have a path where we can make a difference to the world and help people. Because really that's what human life is about. Helping other people, changing people's consciousness, making your life worthwhile. You know, you want something written on your epitaph, you know, he did something worthwhile. Instead of like, he died, you know, he was born 19, whatever age you were born, 1960 or something. Or no, actually, sorry about that, 1990s, and he died, and he was good. Actually, I've been to so many funerals, and usually at the funeral they have a religious person, priest, rabbi, whatever, talking about the person who died who never met the person who died. I don't know if you've ever seen that. The priest or rabbi or minister comes up and talks to the family members, please tell me a little bit about Joseph here. And they give him a whole bio. And so he gets up, and he's so expert, it sounds like he knew him his whole life. But, you know, basically, his family loved him, and at the same time, his wife is saying, I hated the guy, you know. So, glad he's dead. And then I've been at these funerals, right after the funeral, they're talking about the will, you know, why didn't he leave anything to me, you know, whatever. And so do we want to really go from this world or even be in this world with a life that doesn't have that meaning? Someone just has to make up something nice about us. We want to contribute something to this world and be like Luke Skywalker. Not like Anakin. You know who Anakin? Anyone know who Anakin is? He became dark, but he reformed himself at the end, but, you know, that was it. You know, Anakin Skywalker, I couldn't say he led a normal life, but he was definitely on the dark side. But instead, we should take up the lightsaber of Luke Skywalker and do something. Okay, and that's it. So, anyone have any questions? Otherwise, I guess we could proceed with a normal meditation. So, Tulsi, you have anything? Okay. Let me just turn all this off.